Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name's Graham Madison. I'm one of the senior analysts here at Water Tower Research covering the sustainability industry. We're excited to have with us another one of Water Tower's senior research analysts, our chemical and material analyst, Dmitry Silversteyn, for a discussion about seabed mining, which is very important to the sustainability world as the shift towards electrification is driving a huge demand for the mining of materials that go into things like batteries, and the seabed is one of the ways to solve this problem. So with that, Dmitry, thank you for coming on. And can you start us off with just a bit about your background and how you came to follow the deep sea mining industry?
Certainly, Graham. Thank you for having me. Just briefly about myself, I've started my career as a chemical engineer. Worked for 9 years as a process engineer and a project engineer in water treatment, battery manufacture, and fluid handling industries. Before getting my master's and joining Wall Street, there I worked for over 20 years at several research companies and investment banks as an equity analyst, covering basic materials and chemicals industries. Over that time, working with a number of companies whose businesses included lithium, cobalt, nickel, as well as its processing into chemicals and other products as part of their manufacturing divisions. I mean, most of the chemical companies, as you may know, are conglomerates, so they have various businesses. And some of the companies that I work with have had those metals-based businesses that I've gotten to know fairly well. When I came to Water Tower Research about 3 years ago, I got more deeply involved in the metals and mining space, and particularly in the upstream part of it, such as prospecting, discovering, and development of metal resources. And that's where I came to learn more and more about the seabed mining industry, working right now with two companies in that space, the metals company, ticker TMC. As well as Odyssey Marine Exploration, ticker OMEX. Odyssey is a US-based company, US headquartered company, and TMC is a Canadian-based company. So as I got to work with companies in the nickel, cobalt, graphite, and lithium sectors for developing these resources, I got to really understand the issues in the industry, facing the industry, as well as its, what I would say, over-reliance on China in the supply chain. We'll talk about that perhaps a little bit later in this conversation, but that fact is driving a lot of what's happening in the industry right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. Can you just tell us a little bit more about the deep sea mining industry? Sort of what's its history and why is it gaining traction now?
Sure. So, I mean, in its simplest terms, it's basically we're talking about exploitation of seabed resources. I would put it in broadly than, more broadly than seabed mining, because a lot of these resources, they're found in a seabed, or they're found in crusts and in shallow waters off of continental shelves and off of sovereign waters of particular countries. So the industry, exploiting the seabed is not a new thing. Deep sea,
No, offshore drilling has been going on for years.
exactly. Well, not for years, but yeah, since the 70s.
Yeah.
And that has been developed by a lot of countries, including the US, and we are doing it right now. The thing is, as we move offshore and away from our territorial waters and into international waters, the question becomes, well, who has jurisdiction over those resources, and how are they best to be exploited for the benefit of the planet, to put it quite simply. So in terms of kind of the practicality of it, a lot of the technological issues of working undersea have been resolved, as I said, in the 70s. And the early exploration of the seafloor that was done at that time suggested that there were vast amounts of metal and mineral resources. Commercializing oil production is just the most visible example of that in shallow waters. But the further you go off the continental shelf into the abyssal plains and into the deep sea, the more these resources become abundant, and actually the easier it is to mine them, as we'll get to hopefully a little bit later in this conversation. As I said, the problem with deep sea mining is that it's international waters. So until the UN would come up with some sort of a regulatory framework for doing that, any further exploration work and certainly exploitation work was stopped for many decades. In the late 90s, or sorry, in the middle 90s, I think 1994, UN created a special agency, International Seabed Authority, whose mission and whose directive was to develop such an international code for mining resources in international waters. They were supposed to deliver this this mining code in 2020, and then COVID hit, so it's been postponed a couple of years. But it looks like expectations are that sometime, if not end of this year, then maybe early next year, that final code will finally be put out for a comment and adopt. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's interesting that you say that it's easier to do mining in deeper water. Has there been technological advances that have sort of changed the game for the industry? I know if you look at, you know, the natural gas world, fracking changed the game for the availability of natural gas. Has something like that happened in deep sea mining?
It's not a question of, a lot of this technology, as I said, existed from the 70s. Some of the biggest, you know, who's who of industrial companies and oil companies have actually developed this technology and tried it out in real world circumstances. But with the sort of ban on deep sea mining and exploration, the toolbox, if you will, sat idle for a while. It wasn't until ISA got going and produced exploration codes, in other words, regulatory scenario or regulatory regime that you can at least explore the seabed and start collecting environmental data for later use in exploitation. Then it gave companies opportunities, TMC being probably the most prominent there, to trial a large scale pilot runs of this equipment. So why is it easier to do seabed mining? The specific resource that I'm talking about here is what's called polymetallic nodules. There are cobalt crusts and there's nickel sulfate deposits closer to shore. And that's sort of outside of the discussion that I want to have today. But the polymetallic nodules are basically, you know, fist sized to potato sized lumps of, as the name implies, several metals in very high concentration sitting on the bottom of the seafloor. They're not buried. They don't need to be blasted. Then yet they don't need to be excavated. There's no removal of overcrust, if you will, before you get to that deposit. It's just sitting there. So collecting it is much like collecting golf balls on the driving range. Golf balls on the driving range, I'm sorry. The only difference is, you know, the machine that's collecting it is 15,000 feet underwater. What you're collecting is basically metal rock, if you will. But it literally is scooting along the bottom, collecting these rocks and then transporting them up 15,000 feet to a ship on the surface. And then you can take those nodules anywhere from there to get processed. So, getting back to kind of why is it getting attention now? Well, number one, ISA is moving closer to finalizing the code. Number two, as more exploration work has been done, it's become apparent that these metal resources are indeed vast and cannot be left undeveloped if the world is to accomplish its mission of transitioning away from fossil fuel generated electricity and fossil fuel based transportation. Another thing is all of the new resources that are coming on land, whether you're talking about nickel or cobalt or copper or lithium, they are, you know, we've been mining some of these metals, like, you know, especially nickel and copper, for thousands of years. There's just not a lot of good sites left to mine. So a lot of the projects that are being developed right now, they're frankly lower grade, which means higher cost to produce and a lot more ore needed to be processed to get to the volumes that you want to get. I saw that very clearly when I attended a conference in Toronto a month ago, the Prospectors and Developers Conference, where every stand you go by that advertises the grades of the ore that they're looking to exploit, a lot of these are exploration companies, you can see that they are at the lower end of the current commercial production, and most of them are below average for the industry in terms of their concentrations. And then another reason is, you know, as we need more and more of these metals, we're finding out that they're coming from places like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or Indonesia, or China, or Russia, which obviously are geopolitically problematic areas, not very concerned with environmental compliance or the well-being of their citizenry, unfortunately. So Western democracies in Japan are looking for ways to develop domestic industries to counterbalance China's dominance when it comes to processing battery materials, but also to ensure that it's done in a more environmentally responsible manner. And then finally, as companies like TMC, like OMEX, I've been collecting scientific data and having it analyzed by third parties and published in peer-reviewed magazines and journals. It's becoming apparent that a lot of the, really egregious kind of boogeyman, I would almost say, concerns that environmental NGOs have claimed for years and have used to block development of this industry about the dangers of marine to marine life and to the habitat and the seafloor. All of that is being really dispelled as this information comes to the surface. TMC actually put out a several scientific papers or scientific review papers talking about that very thing. So it's not as bad as people thought it was going to be. It's a huge resource that needs to be developed if we're to meet the needs of the world, if you will, for battery metals. And there's now starting to be some political competition as to get who gets to do that first.
No, absolutely. I mean, and what you said about where the metals around the world are located, it tends not to be in easy to get to geopolitical environments, to say the least. How big could the seabed mining be if you look at it in terms of the industry or the demand going out there? Is there any data out there yet? I mean, it's I know it's early, but
There is specific data on like what's being developed or nickel mine production, lithium, mining output, cobalt mining output versus what is contained in a seafloor. The analysis that has been done basically suggests that much in the same way that 70% of Earth is covered by water, about 70% of the nickel, copper, cobalt, manganese, and other metals are located on the seafloor as well.
wow.
The point that I'd like to make is that these are typically very high-grade resources. By high-grade, I mean they have a high concentration of the metal desired within the rock, if you will, in which they are found. The significantly higher, in some cases, for example, Odyssey Marine's one of the companies that it is invested in that's exploring a resource off the coast of Cook Islands. Which is cobalt rich, has a cobalt concentration that is a factor of magnitude higher than you will find in any terrestrial mine.
Wow.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just saying, wow.
Yeah,
That's
and then you get to co-production economics, right? As the name suggests, polymetallic nodules contain more than one metal, typically four at least, in high concentrations. So producing it, you get a lot more usable material. Versus, tailings and slag that you have to get rid of and make sure it doesn't contaminate the surrounding areas, or bury it or do something with it. So economically speaking, this is going to be, these resources, once they get under development, is going to be, if not the lowest cost, one of the lowest costs on the cost curve in terms of production. And it's important because, I mean, metal prices are high now, and certainly they've been high in 22, that came off a little bit here in 23 before recovering. They may not always stay this high. And right now, even at the recovered level, there is probably half of nickel producers out there who are operating at a net loss. Now, they happen to be located in China and Indonesia and other places where economics is not the driving consideration for keeping these plants running. But, the fact of the matter is, you can't continue to do that indefinitely.
So how does seabed mining compare to terrestrial mining, or rather onshore mining, both in terms of like the difficulty of it or the environmental impact or financially the lifting cost?
I mean, it costs a lot to develop a terrestrial resource, same way as it costs a lot to develop a seabed resource. The metals company, for example, they spend close to $500 million exploring and bringing their resource in the Clipperton zone of the Pacific to fruition. And they're still probably a couple of years away and probably about $50 to $60 million away, maybe as much as $100 million away from getting to production. So in terms of cost of finding it, there's not really much of a difference. But the really different the difference comes becomes apparent when you look at the developing of the actual mine and then the mining afterwards. As I mentioned before, we've been mining these metals for a long time. So a lot of the new discoveries are being made in the remote locations, in rainforests and deserts, in high up in the mountains. Well away from any habitable or at least heavily inhabited regions. But there is a problem with that. You have to develop the infrastructure to exploit the mines. You have to build roads. You have to lay down utilities. So there's a lot, and that is fairly environmentally impactful, let's put it that way, as well as a costly process. So that's number one. Number two, as I mentioned before, there is no need to blast or excavate or to remove overburden when you talk about seabed versus onshore mining. One of the biggest issues that the sort of the world is struggling with from the ethical perspective is that most, if not all, of the nickel that's scheduled to come online in terms of new mine production over the next decade and a half is going to be in Indonesia. And most of those mines are located in the rainforest. So you have to basically clear vast areas of what is one of the biggest carbon sinks in the world. You have to relocate the indigenous population. You have to develop the infrastructure to get to that. And then you have to remove, once all of that's done and the mine begins operating, it's an open pit mine. So you have to remove, several feet of dirt and vegetation and whatnot on top of it before you even get to the resource. We talked about needing to relocate the indigenous population, or if not relocated, at least, it'll be impacted by things like noise and dust and pollution, environmental pollution of other kinds. We talked about, where I talked about the fact that the seabed resources are significantly higher grade. In other words, they have a higher concentration. So you end up processing less material to get the same amount of metal out of it, which makes it both more cost effective in terms of running the operations once they're up and running, but more importantly, it provides a lower carbon footprint. Benchmark Mineral Intelligence actually did some did research comparing onshore mines versus the flow sheet that the metals company developed in processing their nodules into a metal matte and a manganese product. They found that, again, an order of magnitude, like you can barely see on the graph the environmental impact and the CO2 and the carbon output of such an operation compared to a typical functioning mine with a attached or remote but closed processing facility. The RKEF, as they're called, rotary kiln electric furnaces. So, those are big considerations. And then finally, it's portable. Once you get those nodules off the seafloor and into the ship, that ship can head to any port, whether it's in Japan, whether it's in the Gulf of Mexico, whether it's upwards somewhere around Canadian shorelines, or in Europe. So these now countries now have or will have an opportunity to develop processing facilities on shore or take advantage of the current ones that are sitting idle, because a lot of production has moved into China or Indonesia. And now some of these developed countries have assets that are significantly underutilized. And you can actually develop your own resource supply chain really quickly. So that's another attractive feature of seabed mining is portability.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense just in terms of the cost of moving the material around to where you want it. So we're coming up towards the end of our time. So I want to ask you a final question. What's been happening in the industry as of late, and what should investors be looking for in terms of things that can be happening soon that might impact the stocks out there in the industry?
Well, I think the most important thing that happened from what I would say a perspective or unfavorability rating improvement for the industry has been the news and the data that's been coming out. We've seen Wall Street Journal write about it. We've seen Politico write about it. We've seen a special on 60 Minutes, where the deep sea mining industry is now gaining attention in a more positive way as a environmentally less impactful path forward for electrification of our economies. So I think that has been a positive development. With that, you have, as I mentioned, ISA, the International Seabed Authority, moving closer to finalizing its mining code. It's, the Secretary General recently at a recent interview said it's a question of when, not if, and the when will not be too far away. So the urgency to get the industry going now that the regulations are going to be in place within the next year and a half, is adding some urgency to the business. China is getting really antsy to start exploring its licensed areas in the Clair and Clipperton zone. It doesn't want to lose its dominance, and it doesn't have a lot of on-land resources that it can exploit. So offshore resources is really how the Chinese government sees they can maintain their sort of foot in the door or their dominance of the industry, even as people begin developing these alternate resources. And you had companies, or I'm sorry, countries like Norway and Japan, and I mentioned earlier Cook Islands, that are encouraging exploration of their territorial waters and eventual exploitation of the resource found there. So, from a political perspective, more and more countries are warming up to the idea that this is an environmentally responsible way to meet their needs. And most importantly, recently, U.S. government has really begun to sort of realize what's going on here, maybe prodded by Chinese interests. But they're realizing the country's vulnerability due to the absence of a domestic supply chain for EV batteries and battery materials. And they're taking steps to address it. Earlier with the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, there's been grants and loan programs set up to help develop domestic onshore mining industry and manufacturing industry with that regard. So some of the companies in the industry have already begun taking advantage of that have onshore resources. But there's a growing awareness of the importance of polymetallic nodules. As I mentioned, the Chinese interest in it. As a result, the Senate committee recently directed Pentagon to examine the use of polymetallic nodules in our industry to establish our metals-based business. The president recently signed the National Defense Authorization Act, which requires Pentagon to submit a report on developing such a domestic metals industry using polymetallic nodules specifically. Now, it was due to drop March 1st, but this being a government bureaucracy, it's a little bit late, but it should be coming out in the next couple of months. And most recently, there's been a bill introduced in the House to provide funding for the development of offshore polymetallic nodule industry. So all of that is showing that the political will is starting to build, that U.S. is starting to actually put its money where its mouth is, and starting to deploy some funds to actually counteract China when it comes to the dominance in the EV race.
Well, this is great. Well, Dmitry, thank you so much. And thank you to all of our listeners. Just final closing comment. The views expressed on today's chat may not necessarily reflect the views of Water Tower Research, LLC, and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast may not be distributed or reproduced without the written consent of Water Tower Research and should not be considered research nor a recommendation. Water Tower Research is an investor relations firm, not a licensed broker, broker-dealer, market maker, investment bank, underwriter, or investment advisor. Additional disclaimers can be found at watertowerresearch.com. Thank you, everyone.